So today I'll be presenting the advantage of harmonization to regulators. In talking about harmonization, of course, we're talking about the effects of non-target organisms to genetically engineered plants. And in talking about regulators, we are, of course, talking about the following agencies. In 1986, the Office of Science and Technology Policy published the Coordinated Framework for Regulation of Biotechnology, and the three agencies responsible for regulating these products are USDA, EPA, and FDA. The products are regulated according to their intended use, with some products being regulated under more than one agency. And if you've been to previous presentations from USDA, we can also see that we coordinated on the use of this graphic as well. Some background for the EPA. We are responsible for regulating the sale, distribution, and use of pesticides in order to protect human health and the environment. The definition of a pesticide is used to prevent, destroy, repel, or mitigate any pest. Therefore, this would include genetically engineered plants that would express a pesticidal property. And these are specifically registered within EPA's Office of Pesticide Programs in the Biopesticide and Pollution Prevention Division. The definition for plant-incorporated protectant, this term was designated by the EPA to describe these substances that plants produced to protect them from damage caused by arthropod pests and diseases. It is defined as a pesticidal substance that is produced in the plant and the genetic material necessary for its production. It also includes the inert ingredient as well contained in the plant or produced thereof. In this presentation, I will specifically be focusing on plants that express an insecticidal protein. Going back to the coordinated framework for biotech products, this table shows the U.S. statutory authority of each regulated product. As you can see, some overlap. Only the USDA and EPA conduct ecological risk assessments of plants expressing insecticidal proteins as part of their regulatory process. One important distinction between the EPA and USDA is that the EPA regulates the PIP protein, but not the plant itself. And another distinction is that USDA will regulate herbicide-tolerant crops, while EPA will regulate the actual herbicide. Since USDA and EPA review similar non-target organism data as part of their ecological risk assessment, these agencies both utilize the tiered approach to the risk assessment process. The risk assessment, of course, in the risk assessment, risk is described as a function of exposure and hazard. And specifically for ecological risk assessment, the basis of it is the hazard of non-target organisms and exposure to the pesticidal substances. In making regulatory decisions, EPA evaluates the risk of pesticide use and balances these risks with the benefits derived from pesticide use. Ultimately, if the benefits of the pesticidal product outweigh the risks, then EPA considers the product to be in the interest of the public. The risk assessment is a tiered process, as noted before by our previous presenters, and the need of additional data is driven by specific triggers. And we also use the weight of evidence based on a comprehensive evaluation of the data. As you can see in Tier 1, these are high-dose screening level tests, usually conducted with a microbial-derived protein with an artificial diet in the laboratory. They are short-term, usually 7 to 14 days, and they use representative NTOs with an exposure of anywhere from 10 to 100 times the actual estimated environmental concentration. Only when there is a significant trigger, which is what we define as 50% mortality, is we move on to the Tier 2 testing, which is also a laboratory test where we will use plant material or a mixed diet and we are starting to get closer to realistic exposure. If there is an adverse effect detected there, that is when we can proceed to Tier 3 or Tier 4 tests, which are conducted in the field. They will either be semi-field tests in the greenhouse or screen house. These are long-term tests, so we are examining the development of the species of the full life cycle, or tritrophic tests. The plant material will be the test substance, and this will be the actual field exposure, which is 1 times the estimated environmental concentration. And of course, if we progress to actual field testing, has the same parameters as semi-field testing, except this is more realistic exposure. There will be multiple locations and census studies to look at sentinel organisms. In the evolution of the ecological risk assessment, which I will abbreviate as ERA, begins with the guidelines for ecological risk assessment, which was established in 1998. We also have taken into consideration several SAPs, which have offered key recommendations that we have incorporated into our risk assessment. And finally, I will also describe some of the white paper recommendations. So in previous recommendations, in the 1998 SAP, the guidelines for ecological risk assessment stated that Tier 1 screening tests at the maximum are conducted at the maximum hazard dose at 50% mortality at 5 times the environmental concentration. There are at least 3 species that should be tested, from parasitic dipterans, predation hemipterans, predation coleopterans, predation mites, predation neuropterans, and parasitic hymenopterans. The majority of the data that we have seen have come from the lady beetle, green lacewing, and parasitic hymenopteran. In 1992, another SAP was convened where the tiered hazard assessment was decided to be suitable for PIPs. However, more testing of non-target organisms, specifically beneficial invertebrates that are closely related to the target species, was recommended, as well as decomposer organisms that should be tested, such as Columbella and earthworm. In the 2001 SAP, and also had recommendations from the National Academy Press, Coleo magillum maculata was designated as being more appropriate than Hippodamia convergens, since it's more of a generalist predator and more readily feeds on pollen. In cases where representatives exposed to a non-target organism cannot be adequately tested in the lab, a closely related indicator that can be easily reared may be substituted. They also recommended field testing to be used to evaluate population level effects on non-target organisms. In the 2002 SAP, they acknowledged the importance of testing effects on PIPs on parasitoids. They also acknowledged the lack of exposure to the green lacewing and that other generalist predators should be considered for Tier 1 tests. The SAP also agreed with the idea of field testing and the additional recommendation that indicator organisms should be selected on basis of potential for field exposure to the subject protein. An example of this would be predaceous carabid and cephalinids, which were identified as suitable indicator organisms for Tier 1 testing. They also agreed that we should ensure adequate exposure throughout the test, verify the level and activity of toxin in the test material, and exposure to all life stages. Finally, in the 2004 SAP, multi-year field studies to assess potential longer-term effects of cultivation on persistence of toxins in the soil and on population of NTOs were recommended to be considered. Control mortalities that have greater than 20% indicated the test that may not be valuable or have the most meaningful results and either need to be repeated or adjustments made to the protocol. They also agreed that tests do not allow the designated endpoint to be reached and are not a useful part of the risk assessment, and that the level of exposure should be based on a detailed quantification of the estimated environmental concentration in the field. They also recommended large plot field studies may result in significant within-plot variation, leading to the need for additional sampling for precise estimation. So in taking all the previous recommendations into considerations, several issues have come up in the ecological risk assessment. I'll begin with the issues that have come up in laboratory testing in Tier 1 and 2. Of course, the appropriate indicator species is key to the ecological risk assessment. We have found that perhaps the Daphnia magna, which was originally identified as being indicative as an invertebrate aquatic species to be tested, is unlikely to be exposed and may not be the most appropriate indicator species. We also want to ensure that the non-target organisms are being delivered appropriate diet and delivery systems, and this will ensure exposure. We've also noted in some of the data submissions that there's high control mortality and that there's also a lack of species source. And an example of this would be the insidious flower bug. There's also a lack of validated test system protocols, while several data packages have included carabids and staphylinids. These aren't as validated, and this is something we are looking for in our ecological risk assessment. We also want to ensure that there is proper duration of exposure and the use of positive controls and verification of activity of the test substance. In field testing, there was also noted limitations in the high variability. And as I mentioned before, previous SAPs concluded that there are limitations to laboratory-based testing that may result in the need for the field or semi-field testing. However, several of the data packages we receive have to be supplemented with the Tier 1 and Tier 2 screening studies with field testing due to the laboratory shortcomings I mentioned before. However, these tests are not triggered due to potentially unacceptable risk in lower tier laboratory studies and are not following the tiered approach to the risk assessment process that was shown earlier. However, in field testing, they also have considerable limitations and high variability. There is also a need for statistical validity. And in conducting the Tier 3 and 4 field studies, it's frequently not practical prior to commercialization of crops expressing the insecticidal protein because of the test plot size and power of test considerations in terms of experimental materials and locations. It is our goal to incorporate all the previous test parameters and statistical considerations that were described here and in previous presentations. Future considerations for the ecological risk assessment are based on the interagency white paper that I mentioned earlier. At this point, we are considering that there is a possibility of unnecessary testing with the parasitic Hymenopteran. This is because it's not associated as a corn pest and exposure is limited due to feeding habits. We are currently asking for field monitoring and census data after 3 years of consecutive planting. And at this point, I would also like to point out that ORD, the Office of Research and Development of EPA, is funding development of valid field testing and the rationale for when these studies are required. And getting back to the main purpose for the harmonization, the key purpose for this presentation is what is the most appropriate indicator species. As noted before, the green lacewing has been discredited due to its lack of exposure, and other generalist predators have been indicated as better, such as the lady beetle, big eyed bugs, or insidious flower bug. Other suggested indicator species are as follows. For lady beetles, another possibility of an indicator species could be carabids or staphylinids. However, as noted before, We do receive these types of data, however, none of them are validated. And this would specifically be for Coleopteran active PIPs. Other suggested indicator species for decomposer organisms, for earthworm and calendula, we believe that there also might be other appropriate decomposer organisms, such as the pill bug or mites. And finally, with aquatic invertebrates, we currently use Daphnia, and other aquatic indicator insects may be more suitable as an indicator species, such as a certain dipteran larvae, mosquitoes, midges, caddisflies, scavenger beetles, or predaceous diving beetles. In conclusion, regulatory agencies recognize the value of coordination and, more importantly, the opportunity for us to coordinate within these scientific forums to display the current issues that are going on within ecological risk assessments, exchange expertise, and ask for input. As noted before and in other presentations, there is definitely a need for validated tests to harmonize the methods used to evaluate effects of genetically modified crops on non-target arthropods. And advantages of this harmonization would include comparability of data, recognition of data provided by various labs, and acceptability of data by regulatory agencies, which would ultimately lead to overall improvement of the quality of the ecological risk assessment. Harmonization will also provide a level playing field and further transparency to the regulation of GM crops. I would like to point out that ecological reviews can be found on the following website, and I would at this time also like to acknowledge Zig Vitusis, who couldn't be here today, Robin Rose for her consult, and Richard Hemlick for his handling of logistics. And if you have any questions, please feel free to ask. And just for food for thought, a quote from Dr. Borlaug on biotechnology to feed the world. Thank you.
Yes.
A validated test would, of course, be repeatable and would have excellent experimental design that is shown in literature and is also recognized by various regulatory agencies and international fora. There are, of course, several studies that are submitted using different methods, but validation primarily means repeatability across various labs.
So if it is a new species, a new test, and they do the experiment in the lab and start it in a particular analysis, will this new test be considered valid?
That is true. The question was if a new species will be studied and proven to be given adequate exposure and validated that this could be considered as part of the ecological risk assessment. And just to note, as far as for EPA, we do consider other indicator species on a case-by-case basis. However, it is our goal to establish set data requirements that will give specific examples of what are the most appropriate indicator species. Yes. Those candidates were chosen based on the white paper that I previously mentioned. We listed them as possible indicative species, and we wanted to put those up there and show them to ESA to ask the feasibility of these species. Depending on what the response is, and later on tonight's discussions, we can decide and cross off or add on additional species. We're still developing these methods. Are there any other questions? Yes. Well, I'm a risk assessor in headquarters. I'm not sure about that. The question, what is the lab for assessing? We receive various data submissions from various labs across. It's normally industry labs and private labs that are contracted. Thank you for your time. I'm glad my voice held out.